From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents a conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for April 16th, 2017. Easter Sunday, happy Easter, happy Passover. This is our weekly look behind the politics and policies that shape Chicago, the state, and Washington. So time to grab that Sunday paper, get that hot cup of coffee, and we'll try to get your day and your week off to a great start. Well, wow, what a day yesterday was in downtown Chicago, Dave. I'll tell you, spring has finally sprung.
I'll tell you, it was amazing. Even though it was windy, it was still just great to be outside. I made it a point. I had a lot to do yesterday inside for a number of reasons, but did make it a point to get out and spend some time yesterday morning and yesterday afternoon, and it was great to be out there, despite the wind, you bet.
It felt weird coming into the tower yesterday without a coat.
Yeah, right.
And I actually brought like a windbreaker and put it in my bag just as backup, just because you never know how to trust the weather here in the city.
Very true.
But it was literally shorts weather yesterday.
Oh, it was. It was. And then when I got home yesterday afternoon, that's exactly what I did. I broke out the shorts in a short sleeve shirt and took a walk.
Yeah,
it was great.
I ran into Rick Hogan. He said he felt weird because he was wearing like a golf shirt. You know, it was just from what we're used to.
Saw him in a sweater the other day.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. Exactly. But, oh, man. And people were all over the place yesterday here in downtown Chicago.
Yep.
And you're starting to see, you know, the Riverwalk was filled. You're starting to see the restaurants are putting out their outdoor cafe areas and things. And I'm beginning to think, you know, it's time to turn a bit optimistic. Although I saw next weekend when we talk again, it looks like the temperatures, the highs in the 50s.
Right. In fact, tomorrow will be near 60, and we'll see that kind of an average throughout the week. We'll have Mike Hamernick on later this morning to talk about all of this. But the rain, for the most part, has kind of moved away. We're looking at clearing skies this afternoon and a high near 70.
Yeah,
that'll be nice this afternoon.
When the sun breaks through, it's going to be just beautiful this afternoon. I mean, it just, you can't help but enjoy it when I think we finally turned the corner. I can't imagine there's a deep polar plunge left.
Well, I have a saying that winter never leaves Chicago without a fight.
That's true.
And that's true. That's always the case. Look at what we've seen. But eventually, in the end, spring and then summer will win out. And now is a good time for this boy to go over to Navy Pier to see the Rolling Stones exhibit.
Yeah, how about it?
Looking forward to seeing exhibitionism.
I have to tell you, that really does sound like a great, like there's any more reason for crowds to gather at Navy Pier.
Right.
But
there were some problems yesterday over there with this wind.
Yes, they shut down the Ferris wheel, which was an unusual occurrence.
Smart thing to do, though.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But even though I enjoyed the outdoors, of course, you know, I was, it was just such a big day of sports yesterday.
And watching our Blackhawks.
I'll get there.
Okay.
I mean, first.
I didn't mean to bring up a touchy subject, but.
First was, you know, watching the Cubs come out to, you know, a big, big lead, only to see them lose 8-7.
Right.
And they even had a chance to tie it up in the bottom of the ninth. Schwarber almost beat out a ground ball. And if he had been on a home run to follow to tie the game, that would have been perfect. But no, 8-7.
8-7. Yep.
And I think the
White Sox getting shut out.
Right.
6-0.
To complete the trifecta, the Blackhawks losing 5-0, and that was ugly.
Oh. quick question here, since we're talking Blackhawks and Minnesota and the White Sox and everything else. Just came to mind. Is Aunt Jo a Minnesota Twins fan? Do you hear from her when they play with the Sox?
She is a Twinkies fan. Yes. It's a great story I love to tell about the Minnesota Twins, and I'm going to embarrass my Tribune colleague, Monique Garcia, who was our Springfield correspondent. And the Twins were in town, and we were at some place, and she sees these people wearing hats that say TC on them. And she goes, "Who are they from?" I said, "Well, that's Minnesota Twins." She goes, there's no C in Minnesota Twins." And I had to explain to her that the TC stands for the Twin Cities that the team is named for.
Yes.
So
Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Yes, so now she no longer asks me questions about sports. But, yes, I did Friday night, I did text Aunt Jo and told her that I was watching the Wild against the St. Louis Blues in their playoff game, which the Wild finds themselves in the same boat that the Blackhawks
do
right
now.
Yes, yeah. Both down 2-0. But the one thing that I guess, you know, they look so out of sync. They look horrible. The Hawks, they were finally able to cross the neutral zone. That was the problem in the first game. But back-to-back shutouts. But the real embarrassment for the Blackhawks right now is the fact that Pekka Rinne, the goalie for the Nashville Predators, has more points than anybody in the Blackhawks in the playoffs.
Oh, really?
Last night, Rinne got 2 assists. The goalie got 2 assists. He's got 2 points.
Hmm.
The Hawks have been shut out. We don't have any points. And, you know, we always talk about my fears of going to a Blackhawks home playoff game and how I never do it. It's just, it's bad. I feel bad luck.
Are you going to hold with that this year as well?
Well, you know, we may not get a chance to see him again.
Yeah.
You know, it's 2 games now on the road in Nashville. I don't believe that's going to be the case. But, no, I'm not going to go. But it's games like those two. That those would be the kind of, if I went, those would be the games I would end up seeing, where you don't even get to hear them play Chelsea Dagger once.
Yeah.
You know, that's.
And they didn't.
No.
Damn.
That's a frustrating thing, very frustrating thing. And, you know, with the Pirates in town playing the Cubs, there were actually, I ran into some folks from Pittsburgh.
Did you?
And they were like, you know, the Penguins, we want to take on the Blackhawks. You know, we want to take on the best. And I said, well, I'd love to see it. You know, it was kind of ironic. They've been here at the radio station. They've been passing out these posters that say 16 wins to the cup. And it's a poster.
They're all over the hallway here in the office.
And of course, it encourages you to, you know, check off each win.
Yeah.
There aren't any checkoff marks.
Checked off. It's still a clean poster. Come on,
it's
guys.
Yes, it is. It's a clean poster. We want to dirty up the poster. I mean, come on, please.
Start writing on it.
Yes.
Instead of just checking off things, start writing
on it. You don't want to see my comments lately. That's for sure. I mean, even last night, I was so frustrated. I mean, and then go down 3-0, and finally, that's when I had to go to bed. I mean, that was such a hole that I knew would be difficult.
We weren't going to get out of.
We've done it before, but I could just tell the way this thing was going. It was just very, very ugly. But let's think better things. It's Easter Sunday.
It's going to be a nice day. The rain is moving out, if not already.
Now, what are you doing for Easter?
Oh, I've got two things today. Easter dinner, when I'm done this afternoon, and Dad's birthday.
I was hoping you were going to bring that
95.
Up. Happy birthday, Dave's dad. And remember last year when we all got together for his birthday?
That was my birthday, actually.
That was your birthday?
That was mine. In August? Yeah, that was mine.
At the
former South Loop haunt.
Yes. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought that was his. Well, he looked dapper, I want to tell you.
He won't go out in public without a tie on. So, you know, that's just a given.
You're not going to wear shorts then today.
No.
proper attire will be required.
Proper attire required, yes. I guess I look a little more civil than I normally do.
Well,
this morning.
I was going to tell you, actually, I was going to compliment you for wearing a dress shirt.
Only one I have.
Okay.
And it's clean, too.
I bet it is. It never gets used. That's the great thing about radio, right?
Christmas and Easter.
Well, good. Now I know what to get you next Christmas. Might be
a new shirt.
A replacement dress shirt, yes. Pretty soon you'll have to have a closet.
Yeah, they did tell me to move things from out of the hall there when I went. Can you move the rack into your room, please?
Do you have any hangers? With one shirt, I don't know.
Well, they come back from the cleaners.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
You know, you just hang on to those for a while.
Oh, absolutely. What are you going to go out and buy some?
No, of course not. Are you kidding?
Oh, man. Oh, Dave, always the sartorial splendor, I have to tell you. Well,
maybe I should have worn a tie to just top it off.
You know, I have an emergency tie at my desk.
I can understand the fourth floor newsroom.
So
I can understand.
If you want to feel free to borrow that tie,
okay,
you're welcome. Frankly, it's so ugly it goes with everything.
Does it have a horse on it or something?
No, it's just a mishmash of colors.
Okay, so
none of which would normally be found in nature.
It will fit in somewhere.
Exactly, that's what I mean. It goes with. That's why it's the emergency tie.
It
goes with whatever you're wearing. So you're welcome to use that today if you want to really look very dapper for dinner.
And I will return it cleaned and pressed.
Oh, don't bother. You could spill on it. No one. That's the other part of it. It's so ugly, you could spill on it.
So that's where all the colors come in.
No. That's the way it came from the factory. Don't ask me where that factory is either.
Right.
But I'd be more than happy to lend you a tie today.
I'll be all right.
Okay.
You have quite a show coming up today.
Well, yeah, we've got a very interesting show today. We're going to talk about some of the issues that they're talking about in Springfield regarding taxes, as far as how it might, if it were to come to pass, how it might affect the home building, home remodeling industry. We're talking to Bill Ward. He's the executive vice president of the Home Builders Association of Illinois. And then at the 8 o'clock hour, we'll be speaking to J.B. Pritzker, and J.B. is running for the Democratic nomination for governor, businessman, entrepreneur, one of several candidates running for the Democratic nomination and the chance to take on Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. So we'll be talking to him between 8 and 8:30, and then from 8:30 to 9, we'll be talking to State Representative Will Gazzardi, and he's a member of, this kind of group of bicameral Senate and House Democrats who are proposing a counter to the governor's, quote, turnaround agenda. Theirs is called, quote, the comeback agenda. So we'll be speaking to him about that. Dave's here to keep us up to date on all the news and sports. Producer Jasmine is here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200. Our text is 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin, on Twitter at @SundaySpin. Engineer Bob is here in the Showcase studio having an Easter egg hunt. And as always, if you have to tune away, you can find our shows on WGNRadio.com. And you can also get our podcasts at iTunes by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. We're going to take a quick break on this Easter Sunday morning. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. Before we start our spin through national politics, I wanted to mention that if you have an opportunity, not only in my own self-interest to pick up a Chicago Tribune today, but certainly that, but also I encourage you to take a look at the great job that my colleague and my kind of seatmate at the newsroom here at Tribune Tower did, Rick Kogan. This is the 20th anniversary of the death of the great Mike Royko, and no one captures him better, I think, than in the story that Rick Kogan did about him, as well as, and it's not just Kogan's story, but there's also he went through some selected excerpts of the thousands of columns that Mike Royko did for the various Chicago newspapers, including the Tribune. And I know that he'll be talking a little bit about that this evening on his show, but I'd encourage you to just take a look, because it just reminds you of just what a classic, iconic columnist that a columnist who spoke for the city. And that's certainly what Mike Royko was. And it's hard to believe that it's been 20 years, but a great job by Rick Kogan on that. And please take a look at that. Well, let's go through our spin through national politics. And, of course, there's no shortage of things to talk about. Washington still buzzing over the U.S. missile strike in Syria, over Bashar al-Assad's use of chemical weapons. We've got the issues of the North Korean tensions growing even greater as Vice President Mike Pence is in South Korea, where he arrived this morning. There's also the U.S. military's use of that mother of all bombs on an ISIS outpost in Afghanistan. But let's go back to Syria for a moment. And Arizona Republican Senator John McCain was on Face the Nation on CBS last week, and he said that the U.S. must do more than just make a symbolic strike on a Syrian airfield.
To a large degree, Bashar Assad, by polarizing the Syrian people, have also given rise to ISIS and al-Qaeda. So they are both connected, and I believe that the United States of America can address both at the same time. We can walk and chew gum. We have the capability to do both. And yes, we want a negotiated settlement, but the only way that that'll happen is if it's not in their interest to continue what they've been successful at for over 8 years. And that's why I thought symbolically and psychologically the president's action was very important, but now we'd better follow it up. And by the way, we should have cratered the runways.
Kind of an interesting aside there at the end by Senator McCain, because of course, despite the U.S. missile attack on that airfield where the Syrian planes left carrying those chemical weapons, despite that attack on that airfield, reports were that very shortly afterwards that Syrian aircraft were still able to take off from that airfield. You're listening to the Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to Bill Ward, Executive Vice President of the Home Builders Association of Illinois. We'll be talking about some of the tax discussions going on in Springfield, should an agreement ever get reached, and perhaps some of the implications that might occur if these taxes were to take effect regarding the home building and the home repair industry. Coming up after the 8 o'clock news, J.B. Pritzker, Democratic candidate for governor, an investor and entrepreneur. And then after the 8:30 news, we'll be speaking to Democratic State Representative Will Gazzardi from Chicago's Northwest Side about the group of House and Senate Democrats and what they call their comeback agenda.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase studio. Wanted to kind of continue our spin through the national politics just a little bit. We started with John McCain talking about that issue of bombing the Syrian airfield last weekend, and how it must be more than just symbolic in our response to Syria. And echoing some of those concerns is Florida Senator Marco Rubio, Republican. He was on ABC, and he questioned one of the White House strategies involving dealing with Bashar al-Assad in Syria.
This idea that we're going to get rid of ISIS and then we'll hopefully use Assad and others to come up with a solution, it's not going to work. As long as Assad is there, you're going to have a radical jihadist Sunni element. Even if you destroy ISIS, it'll be al-Nusra and that new coalition. These people who have been killed and gassed and human rights violations against them will never accept Assad as a rightful ruler, and they will join or become radicalized in order to fight him.
Now, of course, with the White House, there's always controversy, and Press Secretary Sean Spicer, in describing those issues leading to the bombing in Syria, contended that not even Adolf Hitler used chemical weapons on his own people. Think about that. Then he was forced to try to clarify three times, and then finally apologized. Here's kind of how that controversy began.
You look, we didn't use chemical weapons in World War II. You know, you had a, you know, someone as despicable as Hitler who didn't even sink to using chemical weapons.
Opportunity to clarify something you said that seems to be gaining some traction right now. Quote, Hitler didn't even sink to the level of using chemical weapons. What did you mean by that?
I think when you come to sarin gas, there was no, he was not using the gas on his own people the same way that Assad is doing. I mean, there was clearly, I understand your point. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. There was not in the, he brought him into the, to the Holocaust Center. I understand that. But I'm saying in the way that Assad used them, where he went into towns, dropped them down to innocent into the middle of towns, it was brought to it. So the use of it, and I appreciate the clarification there.
Yep, Holocaust centers, concentration camps. Rule of thumb is never really to make comparisons that involve Hitler. That's kind of a standard rule of thumb. Well, we're going to switch gears here on the Sunday Spin, move things a bit more localized down to what's going on in Springfield as we continue with the state's lengthy, seems to be never-ending budget impasse. And we're joined on the phone by Bill Ward, who's the Executive Vice President of the Home Builders Association of Illinois. Bill, thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Good morning, Rick, and happy Easter.
And a happy Easter to you. I know that you guys have a lot of concerns as these, I want to say still evolving grand bargain, but I don't know what the evolution is. But there's still so many kinds of talks as people look for ways to try to figure out how to get our budget in order, how to kind of stabilize the state, deal with not only cuts, but also revenue increases. And I know that, you know, one of the things that's been on the table is the idea of broadening the state sales tax to include services. And that's where you guys have a real issue.
That's right. Lost in the conversation of the grand bargain and the 13 bills and various larger issues is an amendment that was, or language in Senate Bill 9 that went pretty much, it really wasn't seen by the media and not really by a lot of legislators either. What it did was, I believe it was Amendment Number 2, you had this very vague language, and you got to read it several times before you understand what it says.
Was it purposely vague?
You know, I don't know that it was. It was taken from the state of Wisconsin, and so maybe it was purposely vague in Wisconsin. But so it was just kind of stolen from what I was told. And what it says is, I'll quote it. It's on page 57. Of Amendment Number 2, and then again, it's on page 213 of Amendment Number 3, and it's the purchase of service means the acquisition, repair, service, alteration, fitting, cleaning, painting, coating, towing, inspection, or maintenance of tangible personal property or tangible personal property that's been affixed to real estate or a valuable consideration. Now, you could be the best veteran staffer and miss what that means. And I can see why this just hasn't been out there. So as Executive Vice President of the Home Builders, I've been out there trying to get some attention on this and to let everybody know that what the state of Illinois is planning on doing, at least in the Illinois State Senate, is to tax home repair in the state. And it's something that we really need to think hard about going forward. I know that we have to do something. My members know that we have to do something, and we know that it can't be just cuts, and we know that it can't just be an income tax increase. We know that there needs to be more, but this tax, I think we really need to take a good look at and ask ourselves, is this really something that's good for the state of Illinois?
Well, when you look at kind of the what would be taxed and what wouldn't be taxed, there seems to be just all kinds of inconsistencies here.
Yeah, you know, for a while there, we were considering the soda pop tax, and because it was something that it's an option, it's not a necessity, and so we were going to tax, and it's something that, you know, the American Heart Association is saying, so, you know, sugar soda is bad for you, maybe we ought to tax it. So it that served a couple different things.
Ostensibly, now, right, ostensibly there is a benefit, kind of like the idea of raising cigarette taxes and that there would be a related benefit to it.
Yeah, and it's fairly broad-based. Everybody has a soda, maybe, you know, once a day, but... But the home repair tax, what happened was the soda pop tax was taken out of the bill, and in its place was the service tax bill. And that amendment initially took on home repair, warehouse storage, landscaping, dry cleaning, private alarm systems. And then amendment number three added and this is the one that really caught the attention of the media: cosmetics and manicures and tattoos, hair extensions, things like that. So I think everybody thought, well, if they're just going to do a service tax on that, that's, you know, that's not going to hit me. That's not that big a deal. And so that's what got the attention. But I think if you look a little harder, especially on, you know, page 213 of amendment number three, or page 57 of amendment number two, you'll see that you're going to get taxed for having home repair work done on your home.
And I mean, these are things, and part of this inconsistency is like things involving home repair or home improvement, things that wouldn't be taxed for being installed, but things right. would be taxed if they got repaired, like air conditioners, burglar mm-hmm. alarms, carpeting. You know, the installation of carpeting would not be taxed. But if you had carpet, I mean,
that's true for Wisconsin.
Okay.
But you know, Rick, that and I've read the grid. I know what's being done. That was all written in their rule. And as
that was
know,
that was in the Wisconsin rules.
That was in the Wisconsin rules. And as you know, the worst promise in Springfield is we'll take care of you in rule.
That's among the worst. That's you and I know that, but it's among the worst promises. The worst promise is I'm here to help. That's the worst
I'm
promise.
Here to help. Yeah, yes. that's right up there. Yeah. So, you know, so what the Illinois grid would be and what the Wisconsin grid is could be two different things. But if you were to take the Wisconsin grid and put it into Illinois law right now, it's very confusing. It is you got to take a and the thing is that remodelers and repair people will have to take a look at when you have repair work done or remodeling work done. Some of it's going to be remodeling. Some of it's going to be repair. And you know, that remodeler is going to have to distinguish between the two and then make a judgment call on what's to be taxed and what's not to be taxed. And it's just ripe for getting tripped up at the Department of Revenue when it comes time for a tax audit.
Right, because they'll ultimately make the determination of how their interpretation of it is based on whatever the rulemaking that the Joint Committee on Rules decides. But still, right. Revenue will have the final say on it. But for example, like in Wisconsin, though, if you get a new furnace and it's installed under their Wisconsin law, there is no tax on that. But if you have that, but if you have your furnace repaired, there's a tax on that.
Yeah, makes no sense. The other thing is, it doesn't make sense. Is that amendment number two was a 5% excise tax, and then amendment number three is a 6.25% service tax. So they're raising the taxes on us before they even implement the first one.
So,
the other thing about this too, Rick, is that another reason that it's not well known is that this amendment was put on and this bill is on third reading, and there has not been a hearing on this bill. It never went through the hearing process. It went from Senate Assignments Committee right to the Senate floor. And I really think, to do justice for this big of a bill with this much impact, I think you need to provide an opportunity for public input on it. So, and it shouldn't just be in the media. It should be on the, you know, in Senate committee.
So these were Senate floor amendments that went directly to directly onto the bill without committee hearing.
That's right. Yeah. We never had an opportunity to speak on it.
Which normally, I mean, not to get too geeky for everybody, but normally the process is that when the bill is at committee stage, it's normally that's where it's and when amendments are being added to bills, there are committee hearings that are held on those. So everybody can get their testimony in. But it doesn't always have to happen that way. And normally, though, we see this kind of thing at the end of the legislative session when they try to rush things through, not really in the middle of a legislative session when there is time for much more deliberative thought on things going on.
Yeah, that's true. It, January and February kind of had that feel of an end of session energy, is that, you know, President Cullerton, you know, was trying to get this grand bargain through and just and trying to keep it all together. And, you know, and the thing is that, you know, for 30 years, if you believe that 30 years of kicking the can down the road is lacks integrity, then to try and do something now and get it done, then that is an act of integrity. We're not knocking that they're trying to solve the state's problems. We respect that, but we do want the opportunity to judge whether everything in this grand bargain is worth doing. And I think this one particular part needs to be thoroughly thought out, because there's other states that actually incentivize home repair and want you to keep your home up and keep your community looking good and your neighborhood looking good. And here's the state of Illinois that says, no, we're going to tax that, but we're not going to tax soda pop. So it seems ironic that the state would be doing that.
We're speaking with Bill Ward. He's the Executive Vice President of the Home Builders Association of Illinois. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue in downtown Chicago. And joining me on the phone from Springfield is Bill Ward. Bill's the Executive Vice President of the Home Builders Association of Illinois. We're talking about these discussions going on in Springfield. I mean, Bill, and let's take it back a little bit when we talk about this, quote, grand bargain, quote, unquote. This is the effort by Senate Republican leader Christine Rodonio, Democratic Senate President John Cullerton, of trying to craft some kind of impasse-breaking package to get us out of this impasse that we've been on dealing with the budget. One of the things I was curious about that you mentioned is you said, unlike this idea of a service tax on home repair, that other states incentivize a home repair. How do they do that?
They'll create income tax credits for that kind of thing, especially when you're talking about energy conservation measures, things of that nature. If you're doing that kind of thing, the states will do that. But it just seems like something that at the very least you would probably want to leave home repair alone. And come to understand too, this is that home building in the state of Illinois is 50th in the country. We've been dead last for the last five years in home construction. So a lot of my guys, you know, when the recession hit, diversified, and they went into the home repair business to try to keep their businesses going. Now they feel like, you know, the state of Illinois is just chasing them down for one more hit, and they're trying to keep their businesses afloat. We had the National Association of Home Builders did an economic model on what this on what kind of hit this would be on the state of Illinois. And they're estimating that we're going to lose 520 jobs due to this tax, and we'll lose about $43 million in income that would be going to the people that work for the for these businesses. So this is a real impact, a detrimental impact on our on this particular economic sector.
So when you lose those jobs, you're basically losing tax revenue in some circumstance. I mean, there's an offset here.
Yeah. Oh, and not only are you going to be paying this, you're going to be paying this 6.25% tax, but then the remodeler, the repair person, is also going to be paying a $75 fee to the Department of Revenue annually, because they've got to hire more people at the Department of Revenue to take on this task of auditing remodelers. So it's amazing.
I want to go back to something you just mentioned about how Illinois has been last as far as new home construction. And, I mean, what are some of the factors at play in that?
You know, I have a lot of, you know, I give that statistic to a lot of legislators, and they look at you and they ask the same question that anybody else would. Why is Illinois 50th? And you just got to look at what affects home construction more than anything, and that is consumer confidence, and consumer confidence is the belief that you're going to hold on to your job and that your income is going to raise and is going to rise, and Illinoisans don't have that. And so if you're scared you're going to lose your job or your income is going to stay where it's at, then you're going to stay in that home that you're in, or you're going to stay in that apartment you're in, and you're not going to take that gamble of buying a new home.
How much of that concern is based on, you know, what's going on as far as Illinois government? And, you know, we talk a lot, as we have been throughout this whole impasse, about, you know, even businesses that don't necessarily like the taxes that are being proposed or whatever, but that with this impasse is just this great deal of uncertainty. And if businesses want anything, and I think people too, if they want anything, at least give me some certainty here.
Yeah, I believe that's true. And the thing about it is that we're seeing our business is going to out of state. I mean, we're seeing the millennials move to Indiana. We're seeing the retirees move to Florida. They're just people that might normally buy a new home. Are doing it in Indiana, or they're moving to Florida, and so we're seeing what that uncertainty is doing. It's people are moving out of the state, and it's a sad thing.
So basically, you come out of the Great Recession after, you know, many great years of home construction and you know ex-urban construction, particularly.
Right.
And then you get the Great Recession, the housing bubble, on prices collapsing, and then we've never really come out of that.
No, Illinois has not, and a lot of states, and I think a lot of people think that home construction is coming out of it, because if you read national reports, we are. A lot of states have moved up to being at least 50% of normal, to all the way up to 100% normal construction rates. But Illinois is staying somewhere between 25 to 30% of normal. When it hit rock bottom for Illinois, we lost 85% of the new construction market. That's a lot.
We kind of focus, and a lot of focus is on manufacturing and manufacturing job losses and things like that. But when you look at, you know, the components that go into home construction, it's no wonder that, you know, you had members that were looking into trying to save their businesses through the home repair. I mean, it's a natural offshoot of that. But to see that kind of devastation in this industry is unbelievable.
Yeah, and they've got proven numbers from National Association of Home Builders show that there are 3 man years of work for every home that's constructed in the United States, and then an ongoing 1.5 jobs for every home that's built. So given that, if you drop, if you drop 45,000 homes a year from being built in the state of Illinois, then you've lost, somewhere around 130,000 jobs over the last 7 or 8 years that could have been out there. And it just doesn't seem like it's going to come back very soon. We're creeping up a little bit per year, maybe 100 homes. But I can tell you, we're watching the numbers right now for 2017, and it's flat. It's still flat. So it's just not moving.
Plus, I'm sure you guys are keeping an eye on Washington and the talk of tax reform out there and issues like the maintaining the deduction for home mortgage interest and things like deduction on local property taxes as well.
Yes, that's very concerning to us. I mean, with the Trump administration, you get a mixed bag of good and bad for new construction. With regulation and taxation, it may be better. But yeah, if they're planning on, I don't think they're going to do away with the mortgage interest deduction. But I think there's definite plans to scale back on it, and that could really harm our industry too.
Wow. A lot of things to stay tuned for, both at the state and federal level. Bill Ward, Executive Vice President of the Home Builders Association of Illinois, thank you so much for joining me this Sunday, and please have a great Easter.
Okay, you too, Rick. Thanks a lot.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking with investor and entrepreneur J.B. Pritzker, Democratic candidate for governor in the state of Illinois, among those Democrats seeking the chance to take on Republican Governor Bruce Rauner in the fall.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. Happy Easter. Happy Passover to you all. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio and Tribune Tower on North Michigan Avenue. And joining me in studio this morning is J.B. Pritzker, investor and entrepreneur and Democratic candidate for governor. J.B., thank you very much for joining me this morning. Appreciate you coming down to what looked like it was not going to be a great Sunday, but it's going to be clearing up. We've got good weather coming ahead.
Looks like it'll be in the 60s. I don't want to be the weatherman here today, but anyway, happy
Easter.
Are
you good
Rick.
At predictions, by the way?
I predict Governor Rauner will not be the governor in 2019.
Okay, there you go, right there. Okay, and we'll be checking the betting odds on in the Vegas
forecast.
Book.
That's the forecast.
Before we begin, Governor Rauner last week embarked on this two-day, 10-city tour, paid for out of his campaign, says it wasn't a re-election announcement, invited Republican supporters to attend these events. Basically, just continued the rhetoric of what his agenda is. The message didn't really change over the past year, but the circumstances do. And one thing, when he was heading out on day two, he spoke with WDWS Radio in Champaign, and in this interview, he explained why he originally ran for governor.
I ran for governor to accomplish two things. Have a strong, healthy, competitive economy that's booming and creating great jobs and great careers in every community, number one. And number two, to have an outstanding education system throughout the state of Illinois, from early childhood education all the way K through 12, through our universities and our community colleges, as well as ongoing life, vocational, technical, career education. That's why I ran.
Okay. Your thoughts on that?
Well, 2.5 years into his tenure, he's done none of those things. And in fact, he's failing to do his job. He's now campaigning for re-election, pretending that the last 2.5 years didn't happen, as if to say this is his agenda going forward, but we should just forget that 2.5 years have gone by. He didn't introduce, as you know, a constitutionally mandated balanced budget, doesn't want to tell people about how many more people he's going to hurt in his budget, what taxes he might raise, what programs he might cut, And the result is we have an impasse. You know, he likes to blame it on everybody except himself. And as we all know, this is about leadership. You know, when you're governor, you got to step up to the plate. You got to make a proposal for a balanced budget. That's the requirement. And then you got to sit down and negotiate if the folks that you need to work with disagree with you on points. Instead, what did he do? He went into the room. He said, great, lay all your ideas on the table. They did. Then he walks out of the room and he lambasts all the people in the room. And then he walks back into the room and says, great, let's keep negotiating. And then he walks out of the room and lambasts every one of the proposals and then walks back in the room. And that's his idea of negotiating. I've negotiated a lot in my life.
Well, I want to ask you that because, you know, we're in drawing a parallel. I mean, a successful businessman. He's a successful businessman. Both are experienced in the art of the deal, not wanting to use the Donald's great phrase, but know what deal making takes. What do you do differently?
Well, it's a whole lot different. First of all, my values are a lot different than Bruce Rauner's or Donald Trump's for that matter. You may know that I've spent, you know, decades now fighting for early childhood education and getting it. Thousands of kids in Illinois get early childhood education and child care, quality child care, because of the work that I've done.
More than
55,000 kids in the state of Illinois get school breakfast in low-income school districts because of the work that I've done. Bruce Rauner didn't do that work. I did that work. More than 50,000 kids go to a museum every year to learn to fight bigotry and hatred and intolerance. You know, these are big things. I ran the Illinois Human Rights Commission and turned it around. The Republicans had decimated it. This is the state's civil rights court where you go if you can't afford an attorney and you need to get justice because you've been fired from a job because you've been discriminated against. These are the values that I hold dear. I'm a Democrat. I've been fighting my whole life as a progressive, fighting for candidates that I believe in. That's a whole lot different than Bruce Rauner, who's trying to tear down all the programs in state government, social services, education. He's decimated the state. And now we've got, you know, his partner in crime in Washington, Donald Trump, helping him out.
When you look at the Illinois General Assembly, obviously, Bruce Rauner has spent a lot of time trying to demonize House Speaker and Democratic Party Chairman Michael Madigan. And, you know, if you can look at polling and while the governor's numbers aren't that good, Mike Madigan's are considerably worse. But Mike Madigan is the Speaker of the House. How do you deal with Mike Madigan?
Well, two things I'd tell you. I mean, one is I'm an independent thinker, an independent leader, have been my whole life. When I become governor, I'm going to carry with me the views that I hold dear. I think we need a progressive income tax in this state. I think we need to raise the minimum wage. There are so many things that I want to take with me and accomplish in Springfield when I become governor. Whoever the Speaker of the House is, you know, you don't get to choose when you're governor who the Speaker of the House. So you end up across the table from whoever it is that gets elected in their districts and by the legislature. In order to get these things accomplished, I want to run on them. We've got to be straight with the public about what we need to accomplish in this state. You know, the very first thing is we got to restore our social services. We got to build back up education in this state. And then you mentioned this earlier in your program. We've got to stabilize the state so that people will want to create jobs. We need job creation. You know, last year, 0.5% job growth in this state, in the bottom third of states in the United States. I think we're 37th in job creation. I mean, that's abysmal. We have great dedicated workers in this state. We had a terrific education system. We got to restore it. And unfortunately, you know, because the governor is unwilling to go into the room and actually propose a balanced budget and sit down and hash it out, we don't have any of those things. And we've got to, you know, we've got to renew the battle for those things. And I've got to run on it so that there's a mandate so that we can get them done in Springfield.
I know you've talked about wanting to have the graduated income tax. Frankly, I think that's something that everybody running on the Democratic side is supportive of. But yet, that's something that wouldn't necessarily, first, it'd have to be approved by the voters in a constitutional amendment. it's unlikely that would be even before voters in 2018. It'd probably be 2 years after that if it were even to get through the General Assembly. So you're talking about, you know, potential revenue sources that are kind of far down the road. What to get something fixed now, we're going to need some revenue.
Well, bad choices have been made, there's no doubt about it, in the history of the state of Illinois that have gotten us into this mess. As you know
that might be the great understatement I've ever heard.
Well, but it's true, and by the way, you know, many of the problems that we're really facing, the biggest ones, have been with Republican governors and Democratic legislatures, you know, and Republican governors failing to lead, as well as Democratic legislatures sometimes going along. So there's no doubt we've got to fix the problems in Springfield. When you think about how we're going to get there, the progressive income tax is hugely important for a variety of reasons to talk about now so that you can get it done in a reasonable amount of time. You know, we could get it done in the second year of a new administration. So, but if you don't tell people why we're doing it, listen, we're one of the few states in the Midwest that does not have a fair tax system, that doesn't tax millionaires and billionaires at a higher rate than we tax people who make $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 a year. So we need to fix that if we're going to pay for anything in this state. That's one big thing we got to talk about. Are there challenges at the state? Every single one of the big, you know, revenue producers in the state is regressive. If you think about it, right? Sales taxes and income tax, so on, they're all regressive. We've got to change the system, think about how we're going to make it more progressive, make sure that we're getting rid of some of the corporate loopholes in the state so that ultimately the revenue that's coming into the state is coming from those who can most afford it.
But certainly income taxes in a short term would have to be raised.
I think there's no doubt that when the governor puts forward, he hasn't put forward a balanced budget. You know, he's got this sort of mythical, magical $7 billion or so of reform is how he describes it. He doesn't tell you what it is. And he just leaves it to your imagination. And then, of course, he points at the Democratic legislature and says, you know, well, if you give me this Koch brothers agenda, this, you know, right to work state, this, you know, term limits, workman's comp. If you give me these things, I'll let you guys raise taxes. I mean, that's not leadership. That's just a kind of it's fantasy land is what it is. So I think we've got to be real with people. We do have a big budget hole. We've got to deal with our pension crisis. We've got to deal with the fact that we haven't created any jobs in this state. And so, you know, it's going to take somebody who's going to campaign on the idea that people like me and others who are successful need to pay their fair share.
We're speaking with J.B. Pritzker, Democratic candidate for governor. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, joined by investor and entrepreneur J.B. Pritzker, Democratic candidate for governor. We're speaking about his campaign for the Democratic primary nomination. You know, when you look at where this state is right now and this the uncertainty and everything that goes on, you know, be it from the crumbling of the social service safety net to talk frequently about the decimation of higher education, and ranging from the lack of the monetary award program grants for low-income students to the fact that when you look at where these public universities are throughout the state, outside of the Chicago area particularly, you know, at Eastern and at Western, the Southern Illinois University, that frankly is their regional economies. And, you know, we see the state where there's growth, it's up here. It's not in the rest of the state. And perhaps that might be one reason why downstate, you know, went red for Donald Trump, is because they weren't seeing, they were seeing factories leave and the economy just going to heck down there. How do you rebuild a state economy?
You know, think about the statement that you played at the beginning of this show and what Governor Rauner said he was running on. Not a single one of those things has been accomplished. And every one of the things you just mentioned, right, MAP grants, It's not easier to go to college in this state now. It's harder. And we need to make it more affordable. We need to make college available, because this is how you get social mobility in the state. You want people's families and their lives to get better, and higher education is a big part of that. The social safety net. Think about how many people who need mental health services aren't going to get it because this governor refused to introduce a balanced budget. Think about what's happened. And, you know, we've seen, of course, the major impact to Catholic Charities and to, you know, all the social service agencies, but the big ones. But think about the small ones that were doing terrific work in their communities all over the state. And yet, guess what? Many of them have actually closed, the smallest ones, because they didn't have rainy day funds. They didn't have an endowment or something to
or access to capital.
Yeah. And you can't, you know, these and they're all sitting on these IOUs from the state. The governor won't even agree to refinance those IOUs. I mean, we have a huge challenge in the state that we've got to overcome. Now, you talked about downstate communities that are ill affected. Think about the two things that you were really talking about. The universities themselves are falling apart. They've had to let professors go. The students aren't coming back because they don't have their MAP grants. So higher education is decimated. What else happens? The economy of those local, you know, think of Edwardsville and other places where the economy is falling apart because of the diminishment of those universities. And those are often the things that are holding those communities together. So the everything that we care about is being torn apart because the governor is holding up his Koch brothers agenda, his right-wing agenda, and saying, if you don't give me these things, I'm not going to let the state function.
How do we turn it around?
Well, you're going to need leadership. I mean, someone who goes to Springfield, who is going to propose a balanced budget, who is going to stand up and say, working families, middle-class families deserve a break. And working poor who are striving to get out of that situation and into the middle class have a chance and the mobility to get there. And then, of course, we got to stand up for the most vulnerable, the people who are reliant upon social services. And by the way, this is not about, you know, giveaways. This is about stabilizing people's lives so they ultimately can hold a job. So we got to create jobs in the state so that people have an opportunity for mobility. We've got to uphold, of course, higher education so people have the opportunity for mobility. We've got to stand up and try to raise wages, which is what, you know, creating jobs is going to do. We also have to raise the minimum wage. And then you got to restore social services. And we're going to need something like a Marshall Plan to restore social services, because so many of these small agencies are just gone. So we've got to help them restart.
I want to talk a little bit about the makeup of this Democratic primary. And you just put $7 million of your own money into your campaign fund. Someone said, why? It's because you're running for governor and are able to. But I want to get to the issue. You know, you talk about how you're a lifelong champion of progressive values. But yet, in many respects, this campaign seems to be kind of positioned into that dynamic that we saw in the presidential campaign of the kind of Democratic establishment, Hillary Clinton, versus the more populist, progressive Bernie Sanders types, with Senator Biss, Alderman Pawar on one side, and you and Chris Kennedy on the other side as more of the establishment type. How do you bridge this all together? Particularly, you know, because people will always point at your wealth.
Well, let's be clear that it's the media that's decided to break it down into a, you know, into an establishment versus. I'm a progressive.
We're very simple. That's why.
When you've got multiple candidates, it's hard to call them all in, you know, 5-6 categories. But look, this isn't about breaking it down in that fashion. I have been creating jobs in this state and around the country for many years. The 1871, the technology incubator here in Chicago, in a nonprofit setting, we've created for-profit companies that have created 6,000 jobs and brought more than $100 million into the state to support the creation of those small businesses. Those are real jobs. They're good-paying jobs. That's the kind of work that I've done. In my own business, created thousands of jobs. And, you know, so there's nobody there's nobody running in this race and nobody on the other side, for sure, the governor, who's created jobs like I have. So job creation is hugely important. It's something that I'm running on. I don't know whether you call that. I don't know what you want to call that. I call that good for the state. So, you know, if you want to know about, you know, what I care about, look at the things that I have stood up for. In addition to running the Illinois Human Rights Commission and standing up against discrimination in that way and creating a museum that gets kids to focus on how they should fight bigotry and hatred. In addition to all those things, I endowed the Center on Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern University, which stands up for people who've experienced a miscarriage of justice and spent years sometimes in prison unlawfully, and who, you know, they've helped to get out. And then there are all these kids who do something wrong when they're young. You know, they end up in a juvenile detention center for one reason or another when they're young. And then when they get out, right, they maybe made a mistake when they were 15 or 16 years old. When they get out, it sticks with them for their whole lives. And so the Child and Family Justice Center at Northwestern, which I also endowed, has helped introduce a bill that would help expunge the records of people who, you know, 20 years later, when they've been living perfectly good, and productive lives, they're still experiencing, the difficulty getting an apartment or getting a job because of something they did when they were 15 years old. So, you know, these are the things that I stand up for. These are the things that I care about. I'm a progressive. I don't know what you want to call all those things, except that, you know, if you don't think that standing up for a hike in the minimum wage to a living wage, if you don't think that, you know, progressive income tax is, you know, or where the values of, you know, of me as a candidate are, you're just dead wrong. This is what I stand up for. And by the way, I'm the best person in a general election to stand up to Bruce Rauner and say, it's time to implement a progressive income tax that, you know, Bruce Rauner should pay a higher tax than someone who makes $30,000 a year. And so should I. And we need to raise wages in this state and create jobs. And you haven't created any. I have.
That's J.B. Pritzker, Democratic candidate for governor. He's also the businessman and entrepreneur, founder of 1871, co-founder of the Pritzker Group. JB, thank you so much for joining me on this Sunday morning.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to Democratic State Representative Will Guzzardi from Chicago's Northwest Side about the bicameral Democratic House, Democratic Senate kind of plans for what they call a comeback agenda.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Happy Easter Sunday. Happy Passover. This is your Sunday Spin, the last half hour segment of your Sunday Spin. And clouds still lingering here, but clearer skies expected this afternoon with temperatures approaching 70 degrees. Joining me now on the phone is State Representative Will Guzzardi, a Democrat from Chicago's Northwest Side. And Representative Guzzardi is part of a group of House and Senate Democrats who have decided that they're kind of moving on their own as we go through this continued impasse in Springfield, and they've proposed what they call their comeback agenda. Representative Guzzardi, thank you for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me on the program, Mike.
I want to, hopefully you can maybe just lay out the reasons behind this, why this group came together, as well as what this comeback agenda actually consists of.
Sure. I think that the original motivation for us getting together was that we were frustrated, just like probably most people listening to the show are frustrated about the dynamic in Springfield. And, Governor Rauner came in 2 years ago and said, look, the budget's broken and I'll work with Democrats to fix the budget if they give me my turnaround agenda, you know, and Democrats have done a really good job of saying no to that because, look, I think the turnaround agenda is deeply flawed. And, you know, the sort of basic principle of it is we got to, you know, lower pay and benefits for working people to make Illinois more competitive. And I think that's the wrong way to go about it. So, yeah, we've rejected the turnaround agenda, but, you know, we haven't really done a whole lot of saying what do we stand for. And I think the trouble with that is it makes it seem like we think everything's just fine. You know, Rauner comes in and wants all these changes, and we say we don't want the changes. So what, we think things are just fine the way they are? And of course, we know they're not. We know the state is broken. We know the economy isn't working for most people. So a group of us sort of started getting together and saying, look, we as Democrats have these values and these things that we stand for. How can we sort of pull them together and deliver them to the people of Illinois, show the people of the state what Democrats really stand for, what we're fighting for, what we think is wrong, and how we plan to fix it?
And so that brings us to what the agenda is.
What is the agenda? Perfect. What are the ideas? So we have five areas in which we want to work. And in each of those areas, we have a lot of ideas and one priority bill that we want to work on this legislative session to move the ball forward. So the first area, of course, is fixing the budget, because we know that the budget is the biggest problem facing our state. We have a number of ideas of how we want to do that, including closing corporate tax loopholes and making sure that people can't cheat the tax system with stock market income. But our priority legislation on that issue this year is a constitutional amendment to repeal the flat tax provision, the provision in our Constitution that says that you have to tax billionaires and janitors at the same rate, which is deeply unfair. Most states don't do it that way, and it's holding us back from asking the folks at the top to pay their fair share to help fix this problem. So, that's one example. And then we have four other areas in which we want to work. We want to reform government. We want to invest in good jobs. We want to improve our quality of schools. And we want to create communities that are healthy and safe. And in each of those areas, we've got a top-tier bill that we're working on. And you can go to comebackil.com to go read about all this in greater detail than I can probably get into here.
Well, let's talk about the idea of a graduated income tax. And all of the Democratic candidates for the nomination for governor support that concept. But we've seen in the past that attempts to try to change the Constitution for that were very difficult, even within the Illinois legislature itself, even with, you know, overwhelming Democratic majorities. One of the problems being that one of the problems that I saw that happened was the fact that to change to a graduated structure, you don't necessarily want to put tax rates in the Constitution, but that also creates a fear factor that's out there that those rates could be, you know, just very unwieldy and very huge.
Sure. So I think the way that we really want to do it would be to we pass both a constitutional amendment, which would go on the ballot for the voters, and I think if we were doing it right, we'd pass a bill that said if the Constitution gets amended, these are going to be the rates. And so that way people know what they're getting into, right?
Because I think that was the fear factor last time.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's totally reasonable. We could have tax cuts for almost everybody in this state and still raise billions of dollars in new revenue. And we wouldn't have to do outrageously high income tax rates on the folks at the very top. I mean, you know, our neighbors to the north in Wisconsin, like conservative Scott Walker, Wisconsin, their highest tax bracket is more than 7.5%, 7.65, which is more than double what very wealthy people are paying in the state right now. You know, if we taxed incomes of the very wealthy at that rate, we would have billions of dollars a year in new revenue to help fix this problem.
But what about, say, I find it hard to talk about income taxes without also talking about property taxes. And,
it's a great point. Yeah.
With the desire, of course, you know, first when you look at education funding and the fact that schools are so heavily dependent upon, I mean, it's the zip code funding of our schools, basically, by property values. And, you know, the bulk of property taxes in most of the state are to pay for schools. And Illinois, of course, ranks dead last when it comes to state support for public education. But, you know, here for decades, we've talked about the quote property tax swap kind of thing.
Well, that's the only real way to reduce the property tax burden in the state. You know, Governor Rauner has this idea of a permanent property tax freeze, which sounds great, I know, because our property taxes are very high. I mean, in Chicago, but particularly in the suburban areas. And it's genuinely burdensome on families and on businesses. And so the idea of freezing them forever sounds great, right? But it's really just total snake oil. You know, you can't just freeze revenues forever and then expect government to be able to continue to function, right? Costs go up over time. Things cost more. It's the nature of economics. And if we're just going to cap revenue, local governments are going to have their hands tied in a way that's going to really hurt their ability to provide services. So there's only one path to genuine, authentic property tax relief. And that's, as you say, actually spending more money on schools at the state level so that local districts don't have to tax so much to make up the difference. So that's going to require raising revenue for the state. That's the only way to have meaningful property tax reform.
But you also have, too, I mean, the concept, and we've seen it play out in certain aspects in this whole discussion about, you know, education funding in Springfield, about, you know, the continued fears of, you know, what the schools that have, that have property wealth and all of that would become losers to yep. schools that don't.
Yeah, well, that's again a question of revenue, right? I mean, if we're saying that poor districts in the state don't get enough money, then there's only two things that you can, there's only two ways you can fix that problem. Either redistribute the money that you have right now by taking it away from rich districts and giving it to poor districts, or bring in more money and put that money straight to the poor districts that need it, right? So I think folks need to be clear about what they want, right? And I think people,
people want a lot of things. They're just not necessarily willing to pay for them.
Right, yes. Well, that's the challenge of government, isn't it?
Yes.
And you know, I understand that. And that's why I think there's, you know, some of the proposals that we're talking about with this agenda, you know, we talk about, closing corporate tax loopholes. I have a bill in the legislature, House Bill 4004, which would close about $1 billion a year of corporate tax loopholes in the state. Money that we're just handing over to the biggest and most profitable corporations for no reason at all. These aren't like, you know, specific tax incentives or credits. These are just loopholes. I'll give you a great example. So in the turn of the 20th century, when we started collecting sales tax, we created a provision by which we give back like 1.75% of the sales tax that you're supposed to send us as a business for the cost of calculating the sales tax. Like, I don't know, you had to have like a slide rule and an abacus. And I don't know what you had to do back in the early 20th century to calculate sales tax, but it was complicated. And so we reimbursed you a little bit of your sales tax obligation to cover that cost. Well, of course, nowadays, you have computers and software. It's very easy to calculate your sales tax. And meanwhile, you have retailers who are doing, you know, hundreds of millions or billions of dollars worth of business in this state, and we're giving them a big chunk of their sales tax right back just for the privilege of paying their taxes, right? That costs the state tens of millions of dollars every year. We're just giving it back to Walmart and Target for the sake of getting, you know, the privilege of them paying their tax bill. That's crazy, and we got to stop that.
We're speaking with Democratic State Representative Will Guzzardi from Chicago's Northwest Side. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin on this Easter Sunday. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on North Michigan Avenue in Tribune Tower. Joining me on the phone is Democratic State Representative Will Guzzardi from Chicago's Northwest Side. We're talking about he being a part of a group of House and Senate Democrats who have proposed what they call a comeback agenda as a counter to Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and what he used to call the turnaround agenda, and now more euphemistically is the term structural reforms. Representative, I'm curious, and I touched on this with J.B. Pritzker, the Democratic candidate for governor, in the last segment of the show, about the issue of we talk a lot about K through 12 education, but also higher education, and you know what we're seeing across the state, and certainly we know from Northeastern Illinois University and you know Chicago State University and the problems they've had, but also some of the problems that the lack of state funding for higher education has caused in the rural parts of the state, where you know the Western Illinois University and Eastern Illinois University and Southern Illinois University, they are kind of that the bulk of the regional economy.
I grew up in a college town in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. So I know how important public universities are to the lifeblood of those communities. I mean, to the DeKalbs and McCombs and Carbondales and Edwardsvilles. You know, these institutions are critical to the survival of those communities. And we've been slowly, systematically disinvesting from higher education over the course of many decades, and sort of more rapidly in the last decade or so. I think in my parents' generation, you could work a summer job and use the money that you made at that summer job to pay for your next year's tuition at a public university. And that's just not remotely true for my generation. You know, what's happened is, as we have disinvested, government has disinvested in public universities. They got to make up the money from somewhere, so they've raised the tuition. We sort of shifted the burden for paying for higher education from the society as a whole to students. And that's resulted in this enormous crisis of debt for the next generation. And it's also resulted in people just simply not going to college who might otherwise be able to because the cost is so prohibitive. Compound on top of that the state's budget crisis, and you've seen this exodus of families from Illinois public universities. You know, they're going to other states, or they're going to private institutions that can offer generous scholarships. And you know, we've lost massive enrollment at a lot of our institutions, and it's a crisis. It's a crisis for those communities, and it's a crisis for the next generation in the state. And we've got to do something about it. I've got a proposal called Tuition Free Illinois, which would make public universities and community colleges tuition free for every in-state resident of the state. It's an ambitious proposal. It's a long-term proposal. It's where I think we ought to end up as a state. And we're taking steps one at a time toward getting there. We're going to work on a bill this year to try to do some kind of tuition assistance for families to help them make it easier to go to school.
Well, certainly we've seen in New York State, as part of their budget agreement with Governor right. Cuomo, for I want to say somewhat limited, but still I would eventually very generous kind of I believe it's up to incomes of $125,000 a year that their students would be able to attend public colleges tuition free in New York, but there it comes with a catch of sorts that they would have to keep their residency in the state for the duration of the 4 years or whatever that they were able to get this tuition assistance.
I think it's for several years after as well. They got to stick around and work in New York, which is interesting. But look, I mean, think about it. If you're, and we talk a lot about people leaving Illinois, corporate businesses, you know, leaving to go across the river and open somewhere else. If you're a business, if you're trying to decide where you want to locate and how you could recruit the best talent, right? Imagine you could locate in a state where your employees could send their kids to college for free. I think that'd be a huge draw, right? If we're talking about people leaving Illinois, boy, I think they'd really consider staying around a few more years to get their kids through college here. So I think that this is a kind of investment that would really attack some of the core challenges that our state is facing.
But you say it's a long-term goal. I mean, because certainly there would be tremendous cost to that.
There would, yeah. And, the overall tuition figures, the state takes in around $2 billion every year from students, from community colleges and public universities in tuition. So that's the full price tag. I think that in order to make that kind of investment, we're going to have real structural reform in the way our tax code works to finally actually capture some of the revenue that's going uncaptured at the very top of the economy. But in the interim, I think there are investments not that different from what New York made that are, you know, more or less within our means that we can make to target those low-income and middle-income families who are really struggling to pay for college, that we can make targeted investments in those families to make them, to help them get through, you know, tuition payments. And I think that would really go a long way.
Have you talked to any of the university presidents or systems about your proposal?
I have. You know, I've actually gone around and given talks at a bunch of different universities about this tuition-free Illinois program. You know, I was at Governor State. I was down in Carbondale. I was at Northern Illinois University. I've traveled around the state and talked about this. And, yeah, of course, there's a ton of enthusiasm from the students who think this is a great idea. But
right.
There's also... Well, you know, it's funny, the students all say to me, what about the people who graduate before you pass this?
Exactly, right.
Our student is like, oh, sorry, guys, I'm working on it. But no, the administrators, the university presidents and the deans and the folks I've spoken to on campus are very excited by this idea because, you know, they can see that for them it would mean a turnaround in enrollment, right? Like if all of a sudden it was free or much more affordable to go to college, right? Those enrollment numbers that have been slowly declining, I think, would pick right back up in a hurry.
And certainly, you know, I mean, I just think it's as a parent, and my daughters are now out of school, but for a parent now to be considering an Illinois public university, I think it's very tricky.
Yeah. I understand, you know, with institutions losing faculty and shuttering programs and the uncertainty and instability, yeah, it's just another sector of our state that, you know, this budget crisis that Governor Rauner came in and manufactured has really caused enormous harm to, and that we've got to get this thing fixed as soon as we possibly can if we want to try to salvage, you know, the real gem that we have in the state of a great public university system.
That's Democratic State Representative Will Gazzardi from Chicago's Northwest Side. Representative, thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Always a pleasure. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for on this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Bill Ward from the Home Builders Association, Democratic gubernatorial candidate J.B. Pritzker, and Democratic State Representative Will Gazzardi. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening and hope you have a very enjoyable Easter Sunday. And now it's time for the great Dean Richards.
Happy Easter.
Thank you.
Happy
thank you.
Easter to everyone. It's the rare Easter Sunday.
That it all comes together.
Yeah, the Catholic Easter and the Eastern Orthodox Easter the same day.
Right.
This year. So sadly, Eastern Orthodox, you know, my fellow Greek Orthodox, we do not get the half-price Easter candy this year.
That's what the advantage is.
Which is, that's...
Yes, good point. I never thought of it that way before.
Right now, my mother, because I tell that, I've been telling that same joke for like 25 years. My mother's like, stop saying that. People are going to believe you. It's true.
Well, it's true.
What Greek does not buy half-price Easter candy when it falls a week later? I'm not lying. So anyway, happy Easter. It's a gorgeous, unbelievable gorgeous day yesterday.
Oh, absolutely.
It's going to be a nice day today. Yeah, so...
Why don't we get the sun out here this afternoon? Yeah. It'll be 70 degrees. Yeah. It'll be fantastic.
Almost forget about all of our sports teams' performances yesterday.
Yeah. The trifecta yesterday.
It was the trifecta of disappointment yesterday. Exactly right. We've got a lot of good fun today.